the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL wire site that covers Arizona Cardinals. My co-host joining me in this edition of the show, episode 649, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. As we are transitioning, we're going from free agency. We're not quite to our draft prep because there's still just under a month. We're on recording on March 25th. The NFL draft is April 24th. And so we still have some time to preview the draft, Seth. But we've had kind of a dead spot, haven't we? Because the Cardinals are not super active. Free agency has slowed down. It feels like the only thing that we're getting is news from around the league, not the Cardinals, and mock drafts. And those are starting to get... We're hitting that third quarterback becoming a top 10 guy. We're hitting the Jackson Dart as a top 10 pick part of the offseason.
Yeah, and it's getting to the point now where like there's just not much in terms of new content. And when it is happening, it's like today, and you know, you and I were texting a little bit about it in our group chat, and talking about, you know, looking at, I guess, laughing at the fact that it was, you know, you saw Stephon Diggs, who's very talented football player, coming off a ACL at 31, getting a 3-year, $69 million contract with $26 million guaranteed. And you're like, oh, so this is where we're at, right? Like going to the New England Patriots, where, you know, they're probably overpaying for a veteran name that, again, talented player, but definitely not the guy that he once was. And that $26 million that's a lot of money to see spent on a veteran 31-year-old coming off an ACL, right?
It is. I will say it's interesting that the signing happened on Tuesday, just a day after Albert Breer for SI.com did his Monday morning quarterback that had a feature part on Stephon Diggs, which is something that I wrote about based on because of what he talked to a lot of former staffers that worked with him, because he does have the reputation of burning bridges. He is a dog. Like, he loves practice. He's competitive. His coaches loved him. And I wrote how Stephon Diggs would actually fit the Arizona Cardinals, because Brief suggested that what he needs, because what he wants to do is win. He wants to win. And also the diva part of it is like, what's the best way for a team to win? We'll get him the dang ball.
Yeah, and unfortunately that's what he thinks too often, right? Like, he thinks I need to be the guy that's doing all this, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't mind that, but you know, at some point you have to understand too that these guys or this guy is 31. Like, he's not the player he was even 3 years ago, let alone 5 years ago, right? So, like,
yeah.
And you know, let's be honest, that we know for sure, like, wide receivers are different. I was actually, we had our opening night of high school football camp tonight, and we were just kind of laughing because it was defensive night, but like, DBs and wide receivers, man, like, they're just different animals, and they're kind of annoying. Like, you know, they're kind of
they're yappers, full of themselves, man.
They like to talk
so much.
Yeah, and so it's just funny to see it, you know, it's at every level, but of course at the highest level, that's, you know, that's how those guys are, and it's really just funny to see how they play and everything, and the way they, I don't want to say behave, because that makes it sound like they're bad kids or bad people, but you know, just that, that's who they are. And it's just funny. So yeah, I mean, we're at this time of year where we're talking about stuff on dates, right? Like that's what's happening. Cause I mean, we can talk about the newest mock drafts, right? Like we can talk about Mike Tannenbaum dropping a weird mock draft. We can talk about different mock draft situations, but I mean, is that what we want to do every show, right? Like, is that what we want to spend?
We'll give you some of those, but not every time. We a couple of shows ago, we did have that because there were a couple kind of out there. So,
well, and not just that, but we tend to cover when the top guys chat, right? Like, so
yeah,
guys like Daniel Jeremiah, guys like Mel Kiper, they're very good at what they do. But more than that, they are dialed in, right? They're having conversations with teams. And so they're going a little bit based on insight as well.
Yes.
And so, you know, when we talk about those, we're talking about it because it typically ends up being something where they're hearing something from somebody. And so it may not be directly from a Cardinals source, but it could be something that they're hearing from a source that, you know, they trust, that has information that they can trust on the Cardinals. And so they're like, oh, we're hearing that, you know, these are where they're going, because that is one of the things that is, you know, that happens in the NFL and that we have to understand, right? The NFL and these front offices, they do mock drafts too. And they do mock drafts based on what they're hearing as much as possible, so they can prepare for, I don't want to say every scenario, but every scenario, right? Like they're going, okay, if this happens, then we're going to have this available. How do we want to handle this? How do we want to handle it if this guy's available? How do we want to handle it if this guy's not available? What if these three guys are available? Do we want to move down? Like they want to have all that information and say, okay, we're at plan, you know, F or plan K or plan M on this board. What is plan M? Like, how are we executing that? So that's the thing with those guys when we talk about it, because it's typically, you know, something that they're hearing. So you're gleaning a little information more than anything, right?
It's a mix of their own player evaluations, where they have them ranked, and where they hear teams have them ranked. And so like the one where he had Gray Zabel for the Cardinals, it wasn't necessarily that they heard that the Cardinals like Zabel, but that they're hearing that Zabel could go in the middle of the first round and the Cardinals have a needed guard. So connect the dots, dot, 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 things right. Like that. Though we kind of broke down that, like that particular pick would be,
it would be an outlier for field, right?
Yeah. It'd be out in my field for what Monty Austin Force has done. As we broke down on the show, I broke down on Cards Wire as well, because they've gone with their five picks in the first two rounds. It's been Big Ten and SEC. So, and they've gone premium positions. They've been receiver. They went tackle, defensive, not just defensive lineman with pass rushing juice, and corner and pass rusher off the edge. And so those are the positions they've hit in the last two drafts in the first two rounds. Premium players, premium picks, premium positions at big schools. And so that's kind of what I have in mind preparing myself over the next few weeks as well. So if we have a pattern to it, so like if we had to imagine, and we're not going to focus so much necessarily on the draft this show, but okay, middle of the first round, premium positions are tackle, edge, pass rushing upside, defensive tackle, wide receiver, cornerback, and then depends on, we think the Cardinals don't value off the ball like that, but some might. But then you have to look at the players. So like Will Johnson falling, that even though the Cardinals have drafted five cornerbacks in the last two drafts and three in the top 90 of the last two drafts, if Will Johnson comes around and he's there, that sort of makes sense. You look at the edge guys that are from the SEC, you go, you know, you've got James Pierce, you've got Mikael Williams, you've got those guys. You're like, those are guys. Shamar Stewart, even though the production might not be there, you go with the tackles like, you know, Kenneth Grant, if they believe he's a pass rushing upside. I think that's the, like at number 16, when we talk about that, he's like, Kenneth Grant, do we think he has pass rushing upside, or if he's more a two down guy? If he's more of a two down guy, they're not going to pick him at number 16.
Right.
So that's going to be interesting. We'll talk more about that over the next several weeks. And we'll dive into position groups and things like that, players and all sorts of things. But in this edition of the show, we're going to dive into two new free agent additions the Cardinals made. Going to break them down a little bit. The NFL, we learned of what some teams have proposed for the annual league meeting that's happening this week. And what we think of those potential rule changes. And then we're going to dive into the wide receiver position, as you know, we can poke fun at one media, local media outlet, and kind of what we see there. So let's start with the two additions. One was announced, what was reported ahead of time, and the other came out of left field. No one reported it before the Cardinals announced it. So they added former Chicago Bears cornerback Jalen Jones, and they added former Green Bay Packers offensive lineman, mostly guard. He played Tampa last year, Royce Newman. Let's talk about Newman first, because I think he's an interesting case. He only played in one game last season for Tampa. And since he came out of college, and he was a fourth round pick out of Mississippi, he jumped right into the starting lineup, starting 16 games at right guard. And you're like, oh, right guard. Perfect. Only six starts the next year, two starts the next year. Then he doesn't make it out of camp. The Bucks sign him, and he has a mix where he only plays in one game, and he's a healthy scratch for a lot of games as well. And so he goes from being starter to nothing. But my initial take was this, is like, they drafted a guy who maybe could be their starter at right guard, as uninspiring as that sounds, right?
Right. And so that's what you look at with Newman. You know, last year, like you said, didn't play much at all. 181 snaps at left guard in 2023, 22. He played 334 snaps at right guard and then 109 at right tackle. So we kind of had this conversation with the other guy they signed.
Jake Curran.
Yeah, Jake Curran, right? Like, it's that wonderful position of like, hey, break in case of emergency, right? Like, he doesn't have to be a starter. And by the way, he was a starter his rookie year after being drafted out of Ole Miss, right? Like, fourth round picks, played 1,081 snaps at right guard. Like, this was a dude that started as a rookie. So it's not that he doesn't have starting experience. It's just that he's got flexibility at that right guard, right tackle. I know he played a little left guard in 2023. We can kind of throw out last year, right? Like, three snaps. I mean, he barely beat us in the snap count situation. So, but overall, you're talking about a guy with starting experience at a high level. I mean, you know, not to poke fun at teams, but it's not like he was starting on, you know, a two win, you know, New York Giants team, right? Like, this was
a first place 13 win Packers team.
Right. So like, he, you know, high level important games starting. They lost 13. Remember, they lost 13-10 in the divisional round to the San Francisco 49ers that year. So like, you know, again, high level, high importance games he played. So you look at it like it's that perfect, like, all right, is Isaiah Adams ready? Right. Okay. Did they get to draft a Kelvin Banks, a Josh Simmons, a Donovan Jackson, right? Or Gray Zabel, as you mentioned earlier, like all of those scenarios. And if you don't, you go, we're comfortable watching Royce Newman, Curran, and Isaiah Adams battle it out and letting the best man win that position. And oh, by the way, remember, they don't really have the right. I'm not going to, because I think it's disrespectful to Kelvin Beachum, but like, I don't think they thought they have the starting right tackle on the roster unless Jonah Williams is healthy, right? Like, so again, it might be the same scenario. Like, hey, Royce Newman, you know, Blake Curran, you guys are fighting for that right tackle position until Jonah Williams gets back. So, you know, there's a lot of scenarios where these things make sense.
Yeah, yeah. And, but it lends itself. And this is kind of the thing that when they brought in Tristan Colon, is it's a guy who has been a starter, so you know he can do it. It's not an inspiring signing.
No, but not by Isaiah. It's not like you're going like, damn, Super Bowl, like, holy cow, like this guy.
But it's a guy where you're like, you're not just saying, okay, Isaiah Adams, it's your job.
Right.
I think in a perfect world, if they don't draft, or if they do draft, I think they view Isaiah Adams as a guy who is who's a starter moving forward, but they're not 100% sold. Like, there were some nice things he did, but they're not like ready to give him the job like they do other players, like they count on the offseason. So you bring in a guy like Newman. And then if you draft it to like, and like you and I both think, like, if they draft an offensive lineman in the first round, it's going to be a tackle, right? But it might be a tackle that plays guard as a rookie because Jonah Williams is healthy. And then you slide Kelvin Banks, Josh Simmons, whoever, over to right tackle in 2026. And maybe then Isaiah Adams ready, or Jonah Williams isn't healthy and rookie ends up starting anyway. And then you still get the competition between Newman and Adams. But this is, you know, it kind of shows you where they feel they are at. While they did have their eyes on one big offensive lineman that was expensive in Will Freeze, they swung and missed. And apparently he was their one high-end target. And if they couldn't get him, then it was, okay, well, we're going to go as, you know, maybe we'll see. It's a kind of this. So, well, Isaiah could be, but let's bring a guy who could also compete and kind of go from there. We'll see what happens with Will Hernandez with that knee injury, how soon it is, because we'll have to wait and see. And that might be a decision they make after the offseason program if they see Isaiah Adams struggle and Royce Newman struggle. So,
well, and to your point, real quick, to your point, right? Like, until Will Hernandez is off the market, it sounds disrespectful to Will because he's been so good, but like, he's a great fallback plan. Like, oh, Isaiah Adams,
oh, yeah,
part, like, oh, we didn't get the guys that we wanted in the draft, so like, yeah, like, so that's the thing. Until Will Hernandez is gone, it's not like it's over for him coming back if that's where they feel like they need to go. But there's like always the chance that they just feel really good about it.
Yeah it doesn't kind of give he's younger than he was. You go back to, what was it, 2014 or so, 2013, and they thought that, or maybe it was 2015. I don't remember which year it was, but they had that Lyle Sendline was done. They were moving on from Lyle Sendline at center, and they brought in, they had AQ Shipley. They had another guy at center. I don't remember his name, who ended up playing some. Yeah. And then in the middle of training camp, they signed Sendline. It was like, well, we don't like what we're seeing. So Lyle, can you come back? And they, and he played one more season. So that might be a case where we get Will. The other guy that they added was Jalen Jones, cornerback. I saw some really interesting coverage data about him, but I'm not going to get too excited about him. I mean, we'll have to wait and see up with the contract, but he was a restricted free agent that went untendered by the Bears. He has very limited, and this is how it's gone. He played 46%. He played 464 snaps on offense as a rookie. And then his defensive snaps have dropped by like in half or more each time, went down to 148. And then last year he was playing in eight games at 76. And he became a big special teams player in 2023. And I don't think we have the contract information yet, but I don't have like high optimism as to like, oh, he's a back of the roster guy who plays special teams. So he's competing with Ketrell Clark for what might be the back end of the roster.
Right. And, you know, the biggest thing with Jones that I kind of read about with him, and again, like, it's not like we're doing deep dives on these guys right now. But the biggest thing I've read about him is his just kind of inability to stay healthy, right? Like, you go through the snaps and the games and things of that nature, right? It's you look at this year, right? He played in eight games and then was injured. I think it was last year he had another injury. Last year he was healthy. It was the year before that. And so, like, this is a dude that, like, has some athletic talents, but he's dealt with, you know, consistent, you know, kind of like nagging injury situations. And so, interesting to right to Mississippi Rebels, right? Ole Miss running Rebels that they picked up here in both Newman and Jones. So they were college teammates at one time.
And Jalen Jones was also a high school teammate of Kyler Murray at Allen, Texas. So there's that connection. But we're at the moves. We're like, oh, these are guys. Right. And so we'll have to see how the contracts come in. But like the one thing that it is that we think is that Newman could be in the mix. Like if you look at the last 2 years of when they brought guys in. So they brought in Elijah Wilkinson 2 years ago and people like blah, 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 blah. And then, oh, lo and behold, what was happening? He ends up being the starter left guard. They bring in Evan Brown. Everyone's like, blah, blah. Oh, Evan Brown, this. What was he? He was plugged into the starting left guard job almost immediately. Right, so we'll have to wait and see how they view this guy Newman. After all, we do need to trust Monty Austin for it to some extent, because guess what he did? Like what was one of his best moves so far was the scouting that he did offensive lineman with Yelda Froholt, because when they signed him right away, we talked, if you guys remember the 2023 offseason, we felt 100% that there was going to be another move at center. And while they did sign a center in training camp and he lasted a day before he got hurt, he always gets hurt. And so then the fact that Froholt was a guy who had, what, four starts under his belt and they signed him and kind of threw him in that starting center spot kind of almost immediately was, you know, that was an interesting move that paid off big dividends. And so Newman, maybe, because he has a full season under his belt. So we'll see from there. Coming up next on the Rise of Sear podcast, this is our Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's talk about the proposed rule changes for 2025. That's coming up next on Rise of Sear Red. We're back on the Rise of Sear Red podcast, this is our Cardinals Talk on the web. The NFL will meet this week and discuss rule changes. Some will be brought up by the competition committee. There were a total of eight proposed changes in terms of bylaws, rules, and things that were proposed by teams. And we want to go over them and give yours, and Seth will get your thoughts on each of them for what they would be. So let's start with what the Detroit Lions have proposed. That's kind of the first one. They want to remove the automatic first down for defensive holding or illegal content. Still a 5-yard penalty, but would not result in a first down unless that 5 yards took you past the line to gain. What is your thought on that particular idea?
Yeah, I've always hated that rule. It's always been like a super pet peeve of mine to watch it and to see guys get bailed out. Now, there has, and I get it, like I get part of it, right? They want to do that because they don't want people just grabbing on third and 17, right? Third and 17, you just grab a guy because you're going to get beat, and they're like, oh, we don't want you doing that and getting away with it and just doing it two times, and then it's third and seven, and oh, now we got to stop, right? So I get it to an extent, but I think there has to be intent, right? Like, and that's always going to come under fire as well, right? So it's going to be,
yes,
you know, but there has to be like intent, like, oh, I'm beat, so I'm just grabbing. Okay, that's a first down, but like the ticky-tack stuff that we see so often on, you know, third and 12, and a guy, you know, holds at 6 yards instead of only for 5 yards, and that's, you know, that gives them a first down. You're like, really? Like, or the one that always drives me nuts is like when they call the holding away from the play, and it's like,
oh my gosh, yes.
And it's like, oh, that's not even like, that didn't even interfere with anything. So yeah, so I mean, I'm not a fan of it, but I do understand it to an extent. So
no, I here's how I would do it. Defensive holding, it's kind of, for me, is like, well, why do we need to change? Well, defensive holding, okay, keep it the automatic first down. Let's do illegal contact. Okay, we're, you know, which is, that's not the grabbing of the guy. That's just, you know, jamming a guy past the 5-yard mark or making contact at all. I would be more in line with keeping the first down on defensive holding. But if we're going to change one, you can do illegal contact, because that, and it's often is a case of it they didn't get the ball. They weren't even throwing the ball. Yeah, that's the interesting part. Like a defensive hold is kind of interesting, because oftentimes the hold, if it's on the target, that makes sense. But here's the next one, and this is the Packers, and this is basically the anti-Philadelphia Eagles rule. It's the eliminating the tush push, basically making it a 10-yard penalty by the offense to do that. So where, you know, defining it this way, it would be a 10-yard penalty to push or throw the body against a player immediately receiving a snap that was lined up right under center. So the case, like Jalen Hurts lined up under center, he takes a snap, and then those running backs, what do? They immediately jam the quarterback to try and push him through. They would like to make that illegal. And I have heard one guy make a logical thing, and that is Mark Schlereth, who said, hey, if it's good, if this is considered a safety issue for the defense or special teams, all the, like, it should be the same for the offense, even though there have been no injuries that we've seen from this, but on defense, I have mixed feelings about the tush push, because honestly, only the Philadelphia Eagles are good at it, right?
Yeah. Well, and so here's my thing, is what's interesting about the tush push and things of that nature, it's actually illegal at a lot of levels. So like, yes, in high school, you can't push a player. Like, you can't push your teammate. And so it's interesting that, you know, and I get that not you try not to base everything off the NFL, but it's interesting that it's legal in the NFL when those bodies are so much bigger and stronger and more physical. I mean, it's weird because, you know, there's obviously, like you said, just one team that's good at it. So it just seems kind of like a cheat code for that one team, because there's not going to be another quarterback, at least anytime soon, that is like Jalen Hurts, right? Like, there's not going to be a 6'2", 230-pound quarterback that squats 600 pounds.
Hey, right. That's the thing. But at the same time, if you remember the playoff game where it was against the Commanders, and the linebacker just kept like leaping over, just trying to guess the snap count, and the refs almost were at the point where they were just going to award a touchdown.
Yeah.
You get to a point where like, well, what can a defense do? Like, what can a defense do in that situation? I would argue that it is perhaps a safety concern, but is that much different than what they do in rugby, the scrum? And so, I don't know. It would be different if this were like automatic across the world, across the league. But really, the only team that is quite successful at it is Philadelphia. You get Josh Allen and his quarterback power, but that's a little bit different because his is a delay and he waits to run it over left guard. So that is a little bit different in that case. That's not a tush push. That's a QB power run. And, but you know, we've seen the Cardinals attempt to do it a couple times and not, you know, Clayton Toon. It doesn't go well. So not I don't exactly. know. I'm indifferent either way. I wouldn't care if it got banned, but I'm not calling for it.
Well, I mean, our guy Sully talks about it all the time. He's like, look, he's an offensive lineman. He, you know, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, let's be honest, it's not a football play. So like so I get from that perspective where people have an issue with it, right? Because it's just, I mean, it's genuinely just not a football play. So like, I don't care, and I genuinely like have no real dog in the fight, but you know, it's definitely just not a football play to do it, right? Like you said, it's a rugby scrum, so it is what it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. The next one is the Eagles propose bringing the playoff overtime rule to the regular season, where it would change the overtime period back to 15 minutes, and then it would guarantee possession on offense by both teams. Right now, it's both teams with a 10-minute overtime period, but it ends on a defensive score or an offensive touchdown on that first drive. And one of the reasons why they reduced that from 15 to 10 was because of player safety. I don't know how I feel about that, because it does, you know, I've always felt, I never had a problem with sudden death to begin with. And like, sure, if you get the ball first, you're more likely to score. But I mean, you still got to play defense, right? You still have to play defense. Right, exactly. If you keep them out of the end zone, then you can get the ball. I wouldn't care if it was both teams guaranteed, but I don't think that it makes it any more competitive. You know, remember that playoff game which led to that playoff rule between the Bills and the Chiefs, and Chiefs won the toss. They got the ball. They went down and scored. No, the Bills should have been able to get the ball. Well, the same thing would have happened. So the Chiefs scored a touchdown. If the Bills go down and score a touchdown, then the Chiefs would just get the ball back and score a touchdown and win. So you've got to stop them.
Right. Well, not just that, but let's remember the Chiefs got in field goal range and tied the game in 13 seconds. So, you know, there's right. also that where it's like, well, maybe you should have just gotten the stop.
Yeah. So I'm kind of, but what's your thought? Would you change that rule in the regular season?
No reason to for me.
The next
until pies start becoming a consistent like problem, there's no reason to, in my opinion.
Yeah. The next rule changed by the Detroit Lions would eliminate a guaranteed home game in the wild card round by the division winner and say, so just records. So last year, the Vikings would have been the number 2 seed instead of the number 5 seed. I get it. I know the NBA changed it, a long time ago, that the top wild card, the top non-division winner, can be as high as the 4 seed. But because so many tiebreakers are built on divisional tiebreakers, and the fact that you play 6 divisional games, I like the idea, and I've always liked it, that a division winner is guaranteed a home game because they won their division.
Well, and I think the biggest issue always comes back to that, you know, there are times where there's just a bad division, but it's not consistent, right? And so, like, you know, last year, Tampa Bay and the NFC West all had the same records, right? So are we saying that the division, or it should have been, you know, Detroit, Philly, Minnesota, Washington, you know, and then Green Bay, and then
the Rams would have had to have played on the road.
Yeah, the Bucks and Rams were like lower seeds. It's like, no, like, I get it. There are times, there's definitely years where that would be good. I mean, hell, you could have made that argument for the Houston Texans last year, and then they won their first playoff game. So just, again, win, and you won't have that argument, right? Everybody's like, the Chargers. Well, guess what? The Texans won. And are you saying
same thing with the Vikings? Like, what? Well, would it have been any better if they were playing at home?
And it ended up being a neutral field game.
That's true. That's true as well. But, you know, I like this. Like I said,
I get it every once in a while. Maybe, and now that there's no more, you know, 500 records, or I guess if there is a tie. But say, you know, you could make a kicker that said, like, the highest wild card seed can host the lowest divisional winner if the divisional winner's record's under 500, right? Like, you could throw a kicker in there to make sure that on the off chance of one season, a division's just terrible from top to bottom, that they don't get rewarded for playing in a terrible division, right? But, like, for the most part, I'm with you. Like, I just don't see the point.
This next one is more procedural. I forgot to note who, I think it was the Lions as well, that they would like to give an IR exemption for the 90 player limit of the offseason, which is interesting, because I thought that the 90 player limit will exclude players placed on injured reserve prior to or on the day of roster reduction to 53 players, unless a player is designated for return. I thought that's how it was. So whatever, like, anything that comes to roster management in the off season, I don't care one way or another.
No, I agree.
The next one is proposed by the Steelers, which they would like to change. Like, if you remember, it was several years ago. What was it? Was it 2012? Or was it 2013? Was it 2011? No, I think it was 2012 or 2013 when they changed the free agency. They had the 2-day legal tampering.
Yeah.
But what the Steelers would like to do is to not only allow, because there are certain things not allowed. You could reach out, you could talk to agents, but you couldn't plan travel, which is a weird rule.
Right.
What the Steelers would like to be allowed is to be able to have a video call with the players and their agent during that negotiation, and to be able to make a travel arrangements, even though travel would not be allowed until the start of the new year. So currently, teams may only contact agents, not the players, during the window. And for this, yeah, sure. I mean, what's the difference between arranging a trip on Monday as opposed to Wednesday? They still they still have to wait till the league year begins.
Right. I would agree with that.
The next one was, this was proposed by a whole bunch of teams. The Ravens, the Browns, the Texans, the Eagles, the Raiders, the Vikings, and Commanders. This is procedural ball, a procedural rule about the kicking ball. So currently on game day, to prepare the kicking balls, or they call K-balls, they have to be prepared on game day in the locker room. And what they would like to change the rule to is to have the same rules as with the quarterback footballs. And so during the week, they prepare 24 quarterback footballs, and then they're submitted to the league 24 hours before kickoff to have them inspected. And so those teams would like to say, hey, let's just prepare all the bit to save time. So on game day, so there's one less thing to have to prepare. We prepared all 27 of our footballs, the 24 quarterback footballs and 3 kicking balls during the week. And then you still submit that to be inspected the day before the game. You know what? Why is this even a thing to begin with? Why wasn't it like the quarterback balls to begin with? What do they think is happening?
Right, exactly. Are they worried that what are you faking with a kicking ball, right?
I don't know. You'd still have to have them inspected. So unless you're thinking that, and I think the league keeps them until kickoff or until they're there. So it doesn't make any sense. The last one is interesting because the Commanders proposed this. And so these are for scouting credentials, not press credentials, but NFL teams can request scouting credentials to games. And so teams that are already in the post, who have already qualified for the postseason, they would like to be able to request scouting credentials for the final two games of the season for potential opponents that they would see in the postseason. And this is wild that teams that are hosting wild card games, so like if the Cardinals won the division and had a wild card game at State Farm Stadium, currently the Cardinals could tell a team no. So if there's a playoff team, an NFC playoff team who might play the Cardinals in the divisional round after the wild card round, and they want to scout the game in the press box, right? Currently, a team can say no. Nope. They're not required to grant scouting credentials. What? Why? I don't understand that.
Because the NFL's weird about certain rules, right?
And what do you want to guess that the Cardinals are a team that does not allow, that does not grant scouting credentials to teams if they're in the postseason? I mean, granted, the last time they had a postseason game was a long time ago. Nonetheless, would you guess that the Cardinals are a team that says no to other teams for scouting credentials?
Absolutely.
Oh, that would be them. Okay, that's that. I'm sure we'll see which ones go through. I'd be surprised if any of the football things changed, like the tush push and the illegal contact, defensive holding penalties, and overtime. I doubt those change. I doubt the wild card home game changes. So we'll see from there. One last thing coming up next on the Rise of the Sierra podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about the wide receiver position. What do they actually need this offseason? That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. We're moving on, talking about the wide receiver room. The Cardinals have made some small moves at receiver. We know they've got Marvin Harrison. We know they've got Michael Wilson as their top two. They re-signed Zay Jones. They tendered Greg Dortch. They added Simi Fehoko. They have returning two 2024 rookies in Tajon Palmer, one of their draft picks last year, and Xavier Weaver, undrafted rookie who got a little bit of playing time, was on the roster all season. So what do we think that the Cardinals actually need at the receiver position? Do they need someone different than Marvin Harrison and Michael Wilson? Or they just need both of those to produce more, and then it doesn't matter?
I mean, you need that, obviously, the second part. But I do think they need somebody with some, you know, top-end speed to take the top off the defense, something that they've lacked. It was super obvious this year that they lacked that burner that could extend the defense and really make plays down the field. And that's, you know, that's not a bad thing. That's just another part of the offense, and something they lack. And if they can find it this offseason, that would be ideal, right?
Yeah, it would be. But, you know, what's interesting is that I think they're kind of going that direction, because now, don't want to take anything away from Greg Dortch as a player, as a football player. But what he is not is a burner. He's a wiggly, squiggly, quick guy who can make guys miss. He does not have high end speed. In fact, like, if we're going by pure speed, he is the slowest receiver in the room. Michael Wilson he had a 4.59 pro day. He wasn't at the combine, a pro day coming out of college, 4.59. So think what you want about pro days, because those come from the schools, right, which they often help their players. He's the slowest one. Michael Wilson, 4.58, but when he was drafted, we noted the kind of the athletic profile for him. He had a top 90. He was in the 90th something percentile for his 10-yard split, where he is very good off the line of scrimmage, like very good. Quick, he can get quick separation, but then lacks long speed. 4.58. Everyone else in that receiver room has top end speed. Tajon Palmer, he's considered a freak. 4.45. Marv was expected to be a 4.4, 4.3 guy. Xavier Weavers, 4.42. Zay Jones, 4.45. Simi Fehoko, 4.37 at 6'4" or 6'3". Andre Bocelli, the guy that you can't get rid of. He seems to stick around on the roster forever. He's little, but he's 4.38. Quez Watkins, a guy that they added this offseason, 4.35. So it looks like they are going for speed. And if we're going to look at two guys in particular, their actual signings, because Greg Dortch is a tender guy, and we saw them move away from him in the offense a little bit. They saw a lot of those snaps going to Zay Jones, because they wanted to go with a bigger slot. They were moving Marv into the slot. They're moving Michael Wilson to the slot. The bringing back Zay Jones and then adding Simi Fehoko, who has not only top end speed, but length, doesn't it feel like that maybe they want to add that to the roster? And maybe what our hope is, right, is they expand the route tree for Marvin Harrison, so that not only does he get used down the field, but he also gets used on some cheap things like wide receiver screens and things real quick after the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and that was something we talked about. Like, you know, they didn't give the rookie some simple stuff that was easy to, you know, really get some cheap yards off of. And instead it was, you know, like, oh, we're going to give him the complex stuff right off the bat, and he's just going to do it. And he did well. I mean, he did well, but obviously people weren't as happy as with his production as, and, you know, there's already some buyer's remorse from some people because, you know, we're now.
When you look at Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers and Ladd McConkey, you're like, well, why couldn't Marv do that? Well, right. One, they gave him no cheap routes. None of them. He was used for man beaters down the field, and he was used to also decoy away from other receivers to open them up, which interesting choice when you've got a guy like Marvin Harrison.
Right, exactly.
And it became apparent that they weren't going to go after the veteran guys. No Stephon Diggs, no Keenan Allen. There's been no whispers that they've been going at Amari Cooper, even though there was speculation that they could be in the receiver market. Doesn't it feel like they're going young? They got Marv, they've got Palmer, they've got Weaver, they got Michael Wilson. And then the guy they add is Zay Jones, who's not old, but he's not young. Simi Fehoko, who's got 4 years in the league, he's 27 years old. And I'll be honest, I don't think they would rule out a wide receiver in round one. Because I'll be honest, I think Matthew Golden would be amazing as a perfect addition because he gives you top-end speed and gives you that smooth. And we'll talk about this later. To me, he gives off Hollywood Brown type skill with a stronger frame.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting fit in how he'll be, how he'll fit in with what they need, right? Like that'll be the biggest thing. And so if he's a guy that they feel like can be that explosive outside guy that takes the top off the defense that opens things up in the middle and underneath, then yeah, like it's a great fit. I just know that fan reaction would be super interesting, right?
Yeah, that would be it would be fun. That'll be one thing that we talk about leading up. But I wouldn't hate that pick. So if we're looking at this room, if we're looking at this wide receiver room in particular, Marv and Wilson, who do you think will be ultimately their number three? Will it be Zay Jones? Will it be Dortch? Will it be Xavier Weaver, Tajon Palmer? Who do you think is going to develop into that number three role more consistently? Who do you think will probably be the three and the four most often?
I think it'll probably end up being Zay Jones if he gets a full offseason. We'll see how it plays out and things like that. Obviously, that answer may not be on the roster and it may end up being somebody, and then Zay Jones is the four, right? So yeah. There's a lot of options left still, and it'll be interesting to see how these all fit together at the end of the season.
A guy I think we should watch because they did use him late in the year, Xavier Weaver.
They liked him quite a bit.
Yeah, that's a guy I'm kind of interested to see if they see him with some upside. Anything else of note that we need to talk about with that receiver room, or should we save some more topics for another show another time?
Yeah, I think we're in a good spot, and I'm excited to, you know, get into the draft. We'll be 4 weeks out on Thursday. It's Tuesday night, you know, so when this drops, we'll be right around 4 weeks out, and you know, it'll be a fun 4 weeks to get to the draft. But this is always the time of year where everybody's kind of ready for the draft to happen, right?
It is. We'll see if we do another show later this week. If not, then we will dive into our draft prep starting next week, because that'll give us basically between 3 and 6 shows, depending on how many we do per week, to go through each of the positions. Then leading up, so on our draft week, we'll do our mock draft. And then And then we won't podcast during the draft. We'll be very busy. We'll be very busy.
Exactly.
All right. And that'll wrap up this edition of the show, episode 649. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.